That was Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Some more songs from the play. We'll sign off with that, and have a great week. God bless, and see you next week at Big Band Broadway and beyond.
Have to bring an end to the rousing finale of Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. Boy, I haven't heard that one for a while. That's what WHFR is about, things that you don't hear very often on other stations. And coming up next here at WHFR Dearborn, WHFR.FM, the station making waves, is our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Not the same as last week. Local news and alternative views. My name is Jay Koronick. Very happy to be with you today. I didn't know if I was going to be here 2 days ago. I was called for jury duty in Wayne County. Always an exciting summons in the mail. And at the end of about 7 hours of questioning, rigorous questioning, good cop, bad cop, prosecuting attorney, defense attorney, I was selected. I was one of the privileged 14. They pick 14 in case two people sort of drop over in the course of the trial and can't be there to do the final 12-person vote. And we went to trial yesterday. By the way, in the background, you'll hear Dennis Reimars chuckling at my situation here. Hi, Dennis. Good morning.
Hello. No, I want to hear more about this situation. Please continue.
Well, it's not a long story. The case, we heard three people testify about a homicide in Inkster from last August. So that's the wheels of justice. It took 8 months. Is that 8 months? Well, whatever, from August to April to get into the courtroom. And it seemed like it might be a short trial. There was not going to be really any defense witnesses. They were going to put the defendant on the stand to tell his side of the story, but there wasn't much story. There was all these witnesses, including like four police officers are going to testify about the crime itself, and pretty straightforward, shot in the chest, close range, guy died instantly after a dispute among supposed friends, or at least people that knew one another. And I understand that's the way it works, folks. It's if homicide is going to happen, it's among people that know each other. That's like 85% of the time. It's not the unknown stranger in the middle of the night. It's so you can avoid that, of course, by just not associating with anyone you know. There you go. It takes, takes care of that problem. You know, statistics are strange when you try to generalize, but that's what it reduces to. Just don't get to know anybody. Don't associate, and you won't be shot by someone you know. And that's the majority of the statistics. Anyway, of course, one of the people had had the gun, and that means, you know, it's, you know, if they decide they want to get back at you for dissing them or whatever, it's probably going to be fatal. You know, it's not going to be a punch in the mouth or a push in the shove.
Ah, the good old days.
Yeah, yeah, frontier justice, I guess, sort of. Well, anyway, the case was dismissed. It was ruled a mistrial. After 3 hours of hearing testimony, it seems that the defense attorney, during a break that we did take, a break in the morning, start a coffee break or whatever, the defense attorney talked to a prosecution witness in the hallway.
Really?
And as far as I know, indirectly, his story was he was just commiserating them for the bad weather when it was very rainy yesterday morning and so on. It doesn't matter if you talk to the other guy's witnesses outside the courtroom. There you go. So now he's got another 6 months to a year before the case will get back in court.
Wow!
Because they have to reschedule. And we found out from, this was Judge Gregory Bill, his last name, like Mr. Bill on Saturday night. Okay.
Right.
But he wasn't beaten up all the time. No, he wasn't made of clay. He doesn't get beaten up too much. But he indicated to us as he was dismissing us that, Wayne County criminal court at Frank Murphy Hall of Justice is the busiest in the country, has the largest backlog of cases. So if we ever get Gary Warrenchuk on here, because I think it's the county that funds that, why don't they get more judges hired? Why don't they get more courtroom space?
Stop arresting so many people.
Gosh. I hear there's going to be some vacant Detroit public schools. Maybe they could
41?
Yeah, borrow those by fall for a couple more courts. But they have to have the judges appropriately appointed, elected, and all that. And I don't know how that happens, but they'd have to pay them. And then there's the court reporters and the deputies that have to assist. So it's a every single courtroom operation probably costs a couple hundred thousand easily a year just for personnel. And you want the best people.
I think so. Now, was that your first time on active jury duty?
No, I served on another one. It was, I think, 19th District Court. It was it was also dismissed after a few minutes. So I never got to the jury room, you know,
this
for a final.
No,
it was a mistrial.
Oh,
we never
right.
got they to never deliberate. Got we never got to hear the rest of the prosecution witnesses, nor the defendant testifying his point of view. So
his point of view.
Well, it was. That was the defense's case, is that basically he drew his gun and fired because they were within 3 feet, and he probably feared for his own life.
Sure, self-defense.
As if this other guy might have had a knife in his pocket or something. Mm-hmm. And so you can use devastating response, like from a gun, especially at close range, if you believe, and definitely if the other person has a weapon like a knife,
so
at least.
Imminent danger, you can use deadly force.
Yeah, but it has to be within that short distance. You can't be like 10 feet away.
Right.
Because that means you could run.
And it can't take place over 10 minutes. It has to be, you know what I mean? I mean, there's a lot of things that factor in.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to know the laws. They asked everybody before they put us on this trial, if anybody had ever been killed in our family, if we've ever been killed. No, if we've ever been assaulted with a gun.
Right.
And our opinion about guns. In other words, we like guns. Well, nobody likes guns, especially if they're pointed against you. But most of the people's responses were, they were either, I believe, in Second Amendment.
Right.
You know, so that's the sort of constitutionalist. And I certainly do. But they didn't ask me about my opinion on gun control, which is, it seems contradictory, but that's Jay Koronick for you. I'm very much in favor of licensing and registration for guns. I want people to have the right to guns, but I want them, and this is, I know, extreme here. I want them actually to prove that they have training and can properly discharge a weapon and carry it safely. Also, I want to know that they know the rules, the laws about using guns. Now, think about it. Where in Michigan do we already do this? With driver's licenses.
Oh, right.
People have to receive training on the road, sure. Significant hours. They have to prove that they can well drive a car in the driver's test. Of course, they only need to take that once, the first time they get a license.
Right. The written test is on, right. You know.
And of course, it has to be renewed frequently.
Right. Sure.
And even the eye test thing. I mean, if you're starting to go blind or something, you can't pass the eye test later in your life, then maybe you need the license taken away. Okay. And of course, any sort of traffic accidents or problems, they can restrict that license too. So I don't know why, since a gun is much more dangerous, although an equally dangerous weapon in terms of the damage it can cause people and property to a car.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
You know, why don't we have such licensing and registration and training and education? I mean, it seems like a no-brainer to me as a teacher that you don't put dangerous weapons in people's hands until you know at least they know where the lock is. I mean, and I got to explain, too, before we go to the stories, why we're not talking directly about Reverend Jones today and why I didn't last Friday, because I got a call from a listener after, hey, local news, why didn't you talk to Reverend Jones? Now, that person did not use that somewhat slovenly attitude. Very intelligent person, and I tried to explain to him. But specifically, even Reverend Jones, who was happy to proclaim that he always carries a gun, mm-hmm. and he apparently, under Florida law, he has the right to do so, or he has a permit. Mm-hmm. And Michigan apparently has, we have a concealed carry law, but it does require that sort of education and training before you get a concealed carry permit, although it doesn't require it for just getting a gun.
Right.
Which means you could carry it illegally anyway and go around shooting people, or And Reverend Jones, if you remember the story, apparently I just found out about it, but everybody's been covering this so much in the commercial media that everybody I talked to knew this, is that Reverend Jones last week, when he was coming out of an interview at Channel 7, WXYZ-TV, he reached into his car and his gun was under the seat or something, and getting in, he accidentally discharged his own weapon.
Right.
Now, of course, if that was a revolver, there's not usually a lock on it in any way. And I know that some people who are extremely fearful of everything, they even carry an automatic weapon, which does have various kinds of trigger locks and, I mean, built right into the weapon. And it only takes, if you practice, a second to release the lock if you really have to shoot, okay? But a lot of people, I don't want to use the lock. I want to be able to instantly shoot to defend myself. Well, that makes no sense at all. And again, if you practice, that lock can be disengaged, you know, in just a second, maybe less than a second, if you really do need to fire the weapon. His gun obviously had no lock. It was probably a pistol, therefore revolver, where there's a cylinder that goes around, and they don't typically have a built-in lock on them.
Is that the reason why it's called a safety?
Safety.
For that purpose.
Yeah. All automatics that I know of, all mainstream manufactured automatics have safeties.
Right.
Of course, they just need to be, as I said, taken off. Now, trigger guards and other kinds of locks are much safer because you have to have a combination or a key or something, but that will slow you down if you have to use it. My point is that Reverend Jones, obviously, although accidents can happen, he didn't receive that sort of training, or he hadn't practiced how to handle a gun safely.
Right. Maybe it's our colder climate up here.
I don't know. I mean, how did he reach into his car and discharge a pistol?
Right.
That does require getting to the trigger. Did he have it cocked? Some people say Reverend Jones is half cocked anyway.
Right.
I'm sorry. Bad pun there. But he had the weapon already cocked, so all he had to do was barely touch the trigger. Did he have it filed down to make it hypersensitive? Most trigger pulls, and I've researched this because I think weapons, you know, of mass destruction, I should know something about. They take about 6 pounds of pressure to activate the trigger. Now, anybody that's fired guns, they're used to that. Your fingers can do 6 pounds on that little trigger. It's not a big deal. But it's a significant amount of pressure. It's not like a feather touching it and it's going to go off. Right. But if it's already cocked and loaded, oh my gosh, that is pretty dangerous. So he wasn't properly educated. I mean, about the safe, how to use a gun safely, obviously. Of course, I know he was stressed and there's police around and, you know, all the media attention and I guess you can forget things. So I'm not criticizing him directly, but I'm saying I don't understand why in Michigan, I think we should license people who get dangerous weapons. I think they need to be trained and educated. They need to pass written tests about what they need to know, like the laws of discharging pistols and even maintaining them safely. And they need to have a test, a shooting test,
I think so.
You know, before they get it. Even after the practice, they need to go to the, every police department, I think, maintains their own shooting range, like in the basement, supposedly only for police officers, but they could take a person down there and let them fire, I don't know, a magazine, 8-10 shots, and they get an idea of how the person was able to hit the target and also discharge the weapon. And they could even ask them questions like, do you know where your safety is? Show me your engaging of it and disengaging of it, you know, as well as firing it. So it makes perfect sense to me. I don't know any state in the U.S. that even requires that sort of training and education before you get a gun. Now, in Michigan, excellent. Our legislators actually added it to the concealed permit requirements.
Right.
So anyway,
Seems like that might be a decent supplemental revenue for the police department, too, if they're involved in the training process. And then the
Totally support rights for people who are citizens without felony arrests. Former convicts and so on to own a gun if they choose to, but let's find out if they really know how to operate the gun, how to keep it safely, and what the laws are that are out there that are good to follow to maintain that weapon and to utilize it only in what the state believes is the most necessary of situations. So anyway, that was my story. It was a mistrial, and the conclusion is that justice is not blind, but it's very slow. It's blind in the sense of, I think they were trying to be extremely fair to the defendant, who, from the evidence we heard, again, the only evidence that would say he was innocent or not, you know, within a reasonable doubt, couldn't be convicted of murder, of homicide, was to listen to his side of it. There was nobody else speaking his side of it.
Which in itself is telling. I mean, and it shouldn't be.
Well, there were all kinds of witnesses, and they were all on the prosecutor's list. And we heard all the witnesses who were there at the time. We didn't hear the police testimony. Of course, they got there after the discharge, so they couldn't talk about his intentions or how serious the threats were to him by the person that he shot. But nonetheless, it seemed like... from the very one-sided evidence, it was very clear-cut. He was guilty of certainly overreacting and of killing another human being. But nonetheless, yes, he's going to get his second day in court, or days, in about another 6 to 8 months once they reschedule. It is too bad. I mean, you know, our Constitution, the United States of America, says that we all have the right to, innocent until proven guilty, but also to a speedy and fair trial. And speedy doesn't seem to me like 8 months wait.
No.
If he was so poor, he didn't get a bail. And I can't remember something on television. You can't get bail if you're been arrested for murder, for homicide. But I think you can in Michigan.
I don't know.
I mean, jails are overcrowded.
I'm glad you got that far. I got my letter in the mail. I showed up there, and they released me every time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So many are called, but few are chosen.
Right. I have been called 5 times, served, as I said, partially, twice, including the last time, and 3 times they would not select me. One of them, in one case, I was actually told I was not fit for a jury of the defendant's peers. It does say you are... you are allowed to have a trial of your peers, and that can be interpreted, or in my case it was, someone who hasn't graduated yet from high school.
Right.
Because the defendant had not yet graduated. So I guess you're of the same level of ignorance, excuse me,
the other way around,
and experience, or you know, so, social context or whatever of the defendant, you could better understand his situation.
That's so and vague.
Having could... two master's degrees, I guess, puts me outside of being able to understand.
But I mean, you could become that's kind of a slippery slope because you can say that about anything, race, gender, anything.
Right. I know someone I was talking to yesterday, someone on our staff here, he was dismissed because he was part of this radio station.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, as if there'd be a media bias or the story might get out. You know, once the trial is done, you can talk about it all you want to, even what happened in the jury room.
But you know what? What else is that they don't necessarily have to have a reason either, do they?
No, there is, the judge can dismiss for cause as he sees it, if he wants to make that ruling, but he has to express why.
Sure.
The prosecuting attorney and the defense attorney can dismiss for cause, which means they have a good practical reason. In some cases, they hear a hardship. Someone says, I've got three kids at home, I have no babysitter, I have no money, and that's not a reason you can not show up the first day, but I thought the prosecuting attorney and the defense attorneys were very understanding, and they dismissed some people because they didn't want people to be distracted by caregiver at home. Exactly. One person had a paraplegic husband with no, I mean, I think he's flopping around on the floor or something without care while she's down. I don't know. There's some real horror stories that may or may not have been true. Some maybe were exaggerated, but I thought the judge and the prosecutor and the defense attorney were all very understanding about that. I hadn't heard that people be that understanding before. One person was dismissed. We don't know why, because they sent all the whole they cleared the whole courtroom to hear the woman's reason.
Really?
And
you didn't put your
I can only guess that she was previously she was raped by someone who was somehow the defendant.
You never know.
You know, and had that emotional problem.
Something very private, though. Huh?
Yeah, and she said, and it's not normally done. Normally you have to express it right in the courtroom what your reasons are for it. But the judge said, okay, clear the court. We just got the two attorneys here, and we'll listen to it. And afterwards, he let her go. So there's that. And then there is the dismissal. They get, and I forget what they're called, peremptory objections or whatever.
Up to two or three?
The defense attorney had six I heard. So they have more than just a couple. They, in fact, last year I was at, and they called jury pools of 42 to start with, and they only need 14. We were down to the last eight when I was called. So they had already rejected. They had selected 13, and they had rejected another 13 to 15.
No kidding.
And the last time I was called, they rejected all of us. So they had challenges, cause, all 42, they had to wait for the next day to call 42 more jurors in to get started with.
Wow.
Because the jury pool was empty by the time we got done rejecting everybody, which took a day. And that's the most important part of the trial.
Absolutely.
Really,
I was just going
to
say that.
To get a jury that's fair enough as the judge sees it and as the prosecutor and the defense attorney. And that's never shown on TV.
No.
On any, because it's just, it goes on forever. It's very, very much a slow down, an hour long TV drama, you know. And yet, that's the core of it. Obviously, both sides, prosecution and defense, they want a jury that might be biased to find in favor of their point of view.
You know, and there was a movie. I was probably based on a Grisham book, but they talked about that. How there's people that are consultants to attorneys that they can profile prospective jurors.
Yeah, what was that? Was
it's called Runaway Jury.
James. Hollywood actor James somebody or other. He had a TV show just 2 years ago. It's not on currently. And he had he was a high priced, flashy lawyer that had all these terrible clients, criminals and so on. He made a fortune. He decided to, because he got an offer from the prosecutor's office, played by Jerry Ryan, a tall, sleek woman who's now the head of the Proof, which is on. She's the head of the medical examiner office. But the story is about the woman who's the wild and crazy Emmy that gave up her job of being like a brain surgeon to work in the public domain. Well, that's James Woods. James Woods. So he had all these people with him. And in his own home, he had a mock courtroom.
Well, we have that. In my house.
Between you and your wife.
Yeah.
Are there straps and leg irons?
Back to James Woods, please.
Okay. Well, the point was is that he actually did demonstrate jury selection techniques to his the lawyers on his team, the young lawyers that he was also training, as well as courtroom interrogation, that they would go over and practice techniques. They would analyze jurors and the profiles that they needed. So it wasn't a profiler show, but it actually went behind the scenes on things that are actually probably the most important, and that is jury selection and jury selection techniques. But they still didn't spend much time in the drama showing that, but they it was kind of clever how they did that little bit of prep, probably no more than a two-minute scene, but they did a little prep before the show got too far along,
right,
because that was an essential part of their planning. Well, that's not much of a story, folks. If you are called to jury duty, yes, it is your duty. No one expects everybody to take emotions out of the process. If you hear about terrible crimes, they are unfortunate, but you try to be fair to both sides, as they say, the law, the state law. And by the way, the prosecuting attorney for Wayne County was very articulate, very professional. The defense attorney also seemed to me very quick, very smart. And why he did this error in the hallway of talking to the prosecution witness, I could only think he did it because he thought he was going to lose, and they might as well postpone it.
Sure. Something might happen. You never know. If you buy time,
I mean, he's not punished for that, although he can also extend his fees.
Well, I mean, no, it could have been a strategy.
Paid by the hour.
It could have been. I mean, if it was going to be a slam dunk in the prosecution's favor. But you know what? If you could buy time, maybe a witness will come up that you weren't aware. I mean, there's so
many
things.
Or a witness will die. You never know.
You never know. So this guy looked that guilty, time was on definitely something they would want.
Yeah, unless he's still sitting in jail for another 8 months. But free food and water, I guess. Okay, moving on. This is the new WHF Journal, local news in Dearborn and surrounding area. No, we're not going to talk about Reverend Jones, who will be. I will give you a traffic update here, although I think you've heard that elsewhere. The police in Dearborn, according to their email notification on nixle.com, that's nixle.com, if you want to be part of the notification system for your phone or just for your computer or for both, they will do that for free. And so go to nixle.com, let them know you're a Dearborn resident, and you can sign up if you want that. Unfortunately, I get two or three notices a day for everything. Ooh, bank robbery, or a suspect about a kidnapping. Can you help identify this person? Or, oh my God. But yesterday, Nixle said the police are going to close down like Schaefer and Michigan at Dearborn City Hall between 4:30 and 8:30. Because of the supposed speech that's going to be given by Reverend Jones starting about 5 o'clock, I understand. The other twist or turn is that the various groups that were going to protest his visit last Friday in person, I've decided to ignore it today. And yes, I was doing that last week. Number one, I don't want to give him any more publicity for his points of view, which I personally reject. But also, as I was trying to explain to the listener that called, the journal, we're only an hour a week, and we try to avoid stories, even if they're very local, that have been covered extensively on commercial media. In fact, most people I talk to know more about Reverend Jones and the visit than I do, and I know enough that I'm not going to attend. I don't support his views about Islam at all. And is he a hate monger? I know, but he's got a point of view that is negative to at least the Sharia law and jihad practices that some Muslims might support. Not many, I don't believe, support it. But nonetheless, so we're going to move on. And Dennis, the top story in the Press and Guide that I saw, maybe want to comment on it, other than HFCC buying some windmills, which is nice, energy from wind, and we have great alternative energy programs of instruction and technology, and I'm sure that's not going to really generate too much electricity to save on the electric bill for the college, but I think it's for the alternative energy program. And so we're going to have some state-of-the-art technology in that area. The windmill that's on campus right now is like from 1981.
Yeah. So you can tell, and it's a little thing.
The blades sometimes spin, yeah. But there's way past. I mean, it's not working really, folks. Everything wears out, you know, automobiles and so on, and the same thing with windmills. And the technology of that time was so inefficient as to barely generate any power at all. But at least they were, you know, they had it here, and they were involved in that issue before. No, we were mainly concerned about. And this was in the Press and Guide from just Wednesday, 2 days ago, 4/27. Mercury found in Dearborn residence.
This is crazy.
Comment on this, Dennis.
I'm just...
You have the paper in front of you there?
I do. I have my own notes. Okay. The reality is that I think they should have done maybe a bigger sampling than 21 people, but obviously you're relying upon volunteers. A lot of people are like, I don't want to know. They did Sierra Club did this all over the country, 30 cities mm-hmm. nationwide, and yeah. 21 volunteers... out of those, and they say 1 in 7. So I can do my math and say 3 people tested higher than the safe amounts, that higher than the levels EPA considers safe. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one participant had more than 2 times the level the EPA considers safe. And that's, of course, according mm-hmm. to the Sierra Club. We've known about mercury. That we've been told in many cases not to eat certain fish in the Great Lakes for this very reason. I know you've heard this. And this goes back a long, long time, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. At least 20 years or more, yes. Yeah. And people, in fact, even when I was growing up in the last millennium, my parents would warn us, you know, and here's a thermometer, right. Old-fashioned one, not electronic. It's got mercury in it, a little red fluid. Mm-hmm. Might look cute, but if a thermometer breaks, stay away from it. It's not just because of the sharp glass of the thermometer, but that mercury, that fluid in there is completely poison. Poison, poison, poison. A little bit in your system, and it'll cause, it's called a neurotoxin. It's poison to your brain, to your nervous system.
Right.
And very, very dangerous. 1 gram of mercury, 1 gram, who knows the size, could that be a tablespoon? Less, much less, is enough to contaminate a whole lake and all its fish. And yet, according to our friend Michelle Martinez of Sierra Club of Southeastern Michigan, 48 tons of mercury are being pumped into our air, airborne, each year from coal-fired power plants alone. And, of course, Sierra Club and other environmental groups like Ecology Center in Ann Arbor have been fighting additional coal plants from being set up in Michigan. And they are the largest domestic source of unregulated mercury emissions in the U.S. So if people in Dearborn have this mercury pollution, unless they've been playing with broken thermometers, they got it from a coal-fired power plant.
Absolutely.
Okay? And it's not necessarily just the one nearby. It pollutes a wide area, and the mercury is apparently in very small particles. I don't think it can evaporate, but it disperses in a mist, sort of, you know, little teeny particles.
But the actual mercury that you see is really, it is like a liquid.
It is a liquid.
Yeah. It kind of stays
together. So that means it can be separated into smaller particles.
Right.
If you were in a safe situation, you could play with it. But again, you don't even want to get it on your skin because it'll instantly absorb through your skin and kill you. That's how dangerous mercury is. But if you handle it in a lab with gloves and coveralls and goggles and everything, you could try to smash it and it would change to hundreds of little molecules.
Right.
You know, if you hit it with a hammer or something. So it can be vaporized, therefore, apparently, through the power plants and be in very small particles. And these small amounts, extremely harmful. They can be linked to not just damage to your brain, neurology, and your nervous system, but also cancer, heart disease, birth defects, asthma attacks, and my personal bugaboo, premature death.
Yeah.
You know, never a good thing.
Is that a personal bugaboo?
You know, I think all deaths are premature, but
yeah, there you go.
I'm hoping for technology to, some nanobots to keep us alive for a little bit longer, but that's not going to come for a few years.
The United States Environmental Defense Fund listed DTE's Monroe Power Plant as the 11th highest mercury emitter in the country. And a lot of stuff coming out of Monroe.
But the mercury I mean, the plant down there, isn't that Fermi too?
Well, no, their Monroe Power Plant probably.
They've got a coal generator plant nearby too.
And then they have, isn't that redundant?
Well, one of the first things that our Governor Snyder did when he got in office was approve of a permit for another coal-fired plant in Michigan. And folks, when they say clean coal, don't believe that. No such thing. No such thing. Yeah, they can have a few reduced emissions compared to some older plants, but no such thing. Don't believe it. No coal plant should be built. Now, I drive a clean diesel car that I bought. Yes, diesels can be clean. The new diesel regulations in the U.S. and those in Europe, very clean. Cleaner than a regular internal combustion engine car. Okay, I think there's one or two exceptions that beat the diesels. You know, very small cars with specially tuned engines. There's a Honda. There's a little dinky Honda that gets better. And, of course, hybrids, which don't depend on gas engines much, like the Volt or the Leaf, or the Leaf is all electronic. It has no pollution at all. But clean diesel is very clean. Clean coal, not clean at all. That's a misnomer. That's an exaggeration that they use for marketing purposes. So that's the bottom line. The headline, mercury found in Dearborn residents. And the sample, well, you know, it didn't go different ages and so on. I have a larger question to think about too, folks. It was the Sierra Club that did it, not the EPA.
Isn't that interesting?
Shouldn't our own national Environmental Protection Agency be the one most trusted authority to do this nationwide? Well, they don't have the money, and the Republicans in Washington, D.C. are going to try and still to cripple, if not eliminate, the EPA. And I keep saying big government is needed for a few very special things, and EPA is one of those things. And sure, it needs to be regulated and audited. I mean, even Ron Paul wants to audit the Federal Reserve, and Republicans are against that. But absolutely, the Federal Reserve, out of control, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mae, primarily responsible, along with a few of the Wall Street banks, for the crash in 2008. No doubt about that. All the studies show it. All Ron Paul, a Republican, but actually libertarian, a former libertarian for president, he's trying to start a new push, by the way, the next week, to audit the Federal Reserve. And he's got a book, a second from last book. It's called End the Fed. He thinks you can get rid of it. I think we probably need it, but boy, it needs to be regulated and audited. Yeah, it's a federal agency. Let's keep everything transparent and upfront and find out. But who else could better take mercury level samples across the whole country than the EPA? Thank you, Sierra Club, for helping.
Exactly.
But their results won't be finished for another month or two nationally. They haven't compiled the results. This is the evidence that, of course, I guess Republicans or others don't like. That, whoa, we would need more electricity. You know, the fact is, folks, we don't need more electricity. We have plenty of capacity for now. We do. Okay, ask anybody that's realistic. We don't need another power plant. Oh, we got some older power plants, like nuclear ones, that maybe should be eliminated and shut down soon. And a Fermi 2 is not does not continue when it comes up for renewal in a few years. Then there will probably be a slight energy shortage. But we can make all that up by using less. And we can. We don't have to be as wasteful as we are now with electricity and gasoline and so on. We just have to get a different lifestyle going here. Okay, it's a little lecture. Yes, it continues from our Earth Day special last week. But what's more important, Reverend Jones or being safe and healthy on this planet, locally, nationally, world? Give me a break. That's the most important priority.
Well, you're right. And Reverend Jones will go home.
There's no doubt about that.
He'll go home in the next
couple
of days.
Well, that's just a minor distraction.
Speedball.
That's not the major issue to life on this planet and even our health every day. And that just brought it home. I thought that was a very important article. And here the Press and Guide had to put Jones on page one. And at least they got to page two with it. But okay. Moving on down, this is the new WHFR Journal. Well, more of the same. Let's make sure Jim Hightower gets his due here. Here's just one commentary from Mr. Hightower about what's happening in the world here, and trying to drag it into the player. Amazing. Okay.
You got it?
Let's do it. Right. Jim Hightower commenting on punishing the innocent, enriching the guilty. More with the Journal, local news, and alternative views right after this. But take a listen. This is well-thought-through and well-researched stuff that impacts on us, too.
A recent email to me pretty well sums up the big budget hullabaloo being pushed by Tea Party Republicans. As the writer put it, remember when teachers, public employees, Planned Parenthood, NPR, and PBS crashed the stock market, wiped out half of our 401ks, took trillions in bailout money, spilled oil in the Gulf of Mexico, gave themselves billions in bonuses, and paid no taxes? Then he added, yeah, me neither. Yet, it's teachers, the middle class, the poor, the elderly, the environment, and the idea of public service that GOP Congress critters and governors want to punish for the destructive deeds of Wall Street banksters and corporate elites. For example, the GOP's widely ballyhooed budget plan doesn't just end Medicare as we know it, it ends it, period. Instead of extending this efficient and effective health care program, they would toss the elderly under the bus of insurance profiteers. Goodbye and good luck. How's this for bitter irony? Last year, Tea Party Republicans got elected to Congress by falsely claiming that Obama's universal health care program would require, quote, massive Medicare cuts. And now, those same Tea Partiers are not merely voting to cut Medicare, they're killing it. They're also trying to gut Medicaid, taking three-quarters of $1 trillion out of this essential health care program for poor families. Would this savings help reduce the deficit, as they claim? No. It would merely be redistributed to the super-rich in the form of $1 trillion in new tax giveaways. This is Jim Hightower saying the GOP budget plan shows who they are and whom they serve. As one observer says, it's a measure of just how far off the deep end Republicans have gone. That's former President Ronald Reagan's budget director speaking. And we all remember what a lefty Reagan was.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Yeah, that's going to happen, well, every week. Special feature of the new WHFR Journal. And back to you, Dennis. We had a special guest last week from the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter talking about Muttstrut on May 14th, Saturday, May 14th, and Sunday the 15th. And that is talked about in the Press and Guide again this week. Great event. It's going to be at the Ford Field and going to be a big deal. But on the 14th, there's something that I'm going to attend that Saturday that I think is more important and more interesting to me. Tell us about it. And it is a full long, a full day seminar a Saturday of all things, but set up by Sierra Club to start with and some other local groups. So give our listeners,
like you said, it's Saturday, May 14th from 9 to 5 all day. And it's right here on campus at our, I call it the new, it's actually been here for a while, but we're the new owners of the Society of Mechanical Engineers, the SME building. And this international roundtable is actually based on nuclear threats to the Great Lakes and transition to clean, safe energy. This is wild. The guest speakers include a Dr. Gordon Edwards, who's the president of the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility.
Right. They're actually calling it an international symposium because about half of their speakers are from Canada. And guess what? Canada shares about half the coastline of the Great Lakes.
Well,
so they're equally concerned as we should be about pollution of this area. So, yes, we know about the Japan nuclear disaster, but what about nuclear threat in the Michigan area? What's the current situation with that? We have active nuclear plants here and in Canada. How does it affect the Great Lakes? And they'll talk about sustainability issues, too. We've got some of the best people coming. Give us some.
Well, Brendan names. Lloyd is a community organizer with Northwatch, and he's worked for more than two decades on nuclear waste issues in Canada. After that, there's a Michael Keegan, who's co-chair of Don't Waste Michigan and chair of Coalition for a Nuclear-Free Great Lakes. Kevin Camps is a radioactive waste watchdog from Beyond Nuclear to discuss the reactor waste policy in the Great Lakes. And, of course, our own Greg Laskowski. He's from Henry Ford Community College, a lead instructor in the Energy and Technology Department. And Kathleen Law, former Michigan legislature, she'll be here. She introduced the first German-style renewable energy bill in North America. And Victor McManamy, and he's a Great Lakes songwriter, troubadour, historian, musician, and advocate.
We'll get some entertainment, too, yeah. that day. There is a cost, of $25, but it's a professional seminar, folks, professional information going on here.
And you get lunch.
You do get lunch there for your $25. Now, it's a suggested minimum donation for this event, and it is 2 weeks from tomorrow. Starts on Saturday morning, May 14th. It's from 9 to 5. I think you can get in there at 8:30.
Right.
Now, they do want you to register in advance.
Yeah, it's $30 at the door, isn't it?
Yeah, it's $30 a door if they have the seating available when you get there.
Right.
It is limited. I've seen if it's the same room they use for the sustainability conference, I'd say 150 people maybe at most.
Call.
I don't know what the... if they're going to open a second room or whatever. The building is huge, but only have use of a couple rooms.
And that room you're talking about is actually divided normally, and they would open it up.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, they have the – it's a wonderful – if anybody hasn't been there, it's a wonderful place to meet.
Right. It's just the north entrance closest to Ford Road, mm-hmm. if you're coming south on Ford. That's to the HFCC SME building. Has its own parking lot, so you don't have to walk across campus. A lot of free parking right there at the building. But so I don't know what the easiest thing is to mention over the air. That website to go to is tiny.cc. I kid you not. It's the word tiny.
It's a tiny URL, which means it's traditionally longer.
Well, it is longer. tiny.cc/nukeroundtable. One word. Nuke, like nuclear, N-U-K-E, though. Mm-hmm. Nuke round table, all one word. So tiny.cc/nukeroundtable. And you can pay online with a charge card. The address is... huge, long, and it's in Brown City, Michigan. So now, in a pinch here, you could just Google Sierra Club, Michigan somehow and probably find a link to this event, and you can register that way. They do need to find out in advance, and you'd have to do that if you wanted to be able to come in the door. $25 in advance, including lunch. Okay, students are free. But if request $5, but they are requesting $5 from each of them for lunch. Now, students should register or RSVP to Ed McArdle at ecoguide2@netzero.net. Oh, my goodness. But you can find out, again, I'm sure if you go to just Google Sierra Club Michigan, and there's got to be a link there to the event, and then they'd have a link for students to register. That's very, very good that they're allowing students to register for free. Of course, food costs money, so... they're charging. It's sponsored by Sierra Club Southeastern Michigan, Sierra Club of Canada,
right.
Ohio Sierra Club Nuclear Issues Committee, and Citizens for Alternatives to Chemical Contamination. Well, I hope there's some alternatives to chemical contamination.
Yeah, it's probably two or three.
Gee whiz. I mean, is anybody not in favor of alternatives to chemical contamination?
Well, the big businesses, the big companies.
I don't know. Yeah, if you're doing chemical contamination, I guess you're not.
Right.
And thank you, Sierra Club, all the Sierra Clubs. That's a wonderful organization. What's my bias to them? I'm a life member. That's right. I paid the money years ago, paying payments for 20 years or whatever, and I'm a lifetime member of Sierra Club. Obviously, I believe they're the single best environmental organization in the U.S., and because they are national as well as state and local, they can really do the job and get organized quickly and get the word out. So I highly recommend Sierra Club in almost every single one of their many, many pursuits.
Thankfully they're there because they're the watchdog. You know, you were talking about the EPA should be doing this testing.
Right.
Sierra Club is, and you know why? They did all this testing for mercury to put additional pressure on the EPA to mm-hmm. close down some of these or not construct new coal plants. So, no, good for them.
We have about 13 minutes remaining before Highway 61, the Best in Blues, comes up today from 2 to 6 p.m. I wanted to give you an update. I got it back on April 12th. Governor Snyder had proposed, and it hasn't been approved yet. It hasn't gone through the House and Senate, but they're controlled, the House and Senate in Michigan, controlled by Republicans. and he's a Republican. So unless there's a lot of feedback, his proposal was to tax the previously untaxed pensions of people in Michigan. And this is public pensions, private pensions, 401k, and IRAs. Now, that's not Social Security. According to the new proposal, and I'm going to go down, that he made on the 12th, because he did get a lot of feedback from seniors, thank you seniors like myself, who are on state of Michigan pensions. I'm on a teacher's pension. I'm a retired teacher from Henry Ford Community College. I'm on a state pension, that's the way that goes. But, they were going to extend the state income tax, which is 4.25%. 4.35%, excuse me, include public pensions. So this is his proposal. He suggested, since people didn't seem to like that across the board, he suggested three categories. Those people born before 1946 will not be taxed for private pensions. Public pensions will not be taxed. Social Security will not be taxed. Okay, military pensions. So they wouldn't be part of this. And I had to be born on January 3rd, 1946, so I missed by 3 days. Why couldn't my mother, I was a preemie anyway, what would have been so bad if she was able to deliver 3 days earlier? Then I wouldn't have had, well, my category is, and those born between January 1st, 46 and December 31st, 1952, we're going to be taxed a little. Okay, but we get a retirement income credit of $20,000 for single filers and $40,000 for joint filers. So private pensions above that would get the 4.35 tax, but we will be excused from paying up to $20,000 for singles, $40,000 for joint. Now, retirement income, as I said, above the exemption will be taxed at the 4.35%, but not Social Security, not military pensions. Okay? Now, yes, those poor people born after 1952, and you know who you are if you remember your birth date, yes, you will start getting hit. All of your retirement, private pensions, public pensions will be taxed at 4.35%, but not Social Security, not military pensions. Well, I just want to point out, though, and I don't know about military pensions, how big or small they are, but Social Security is a pittance. I could not live on Social Security in the manner to which I am accustomed.
No.
Not at all. I mean, I would be at the poverty level after 40 years of full-time employment. Okay, I'd be at the poverty level if Social Security was the only money I had. So, in a way, Republicans said, let's do away with Social Security. Not helping me. It's helping a few people, thank goodness. And thank goodness it's there for a lot of people who have no money at all. I mean, it's desperation funding, but if that's all you got, at least you got something. Still, it's my state pension that gives me enough money to be above the poverty level. And I'm going to be taxed. Now, I did look into what states won't tax my pension, and I could, yes, up and move to another state. I think it's about 12 to 15 states that don't tax private or public pensions.
Is Texas one of them?
It's not a comprehensive survey, and I didn't look at Texas.
You didn't?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I should have, because that's one state I've always admired. Not Texas, but Austin I admire. Okay. It's a city in Texas. Everywhere else in Texas, I'm sorry, I don't admire them. I don't admire their governor. I don't admire anything about the state except Austin, Texas. Well, anyway, it's like an oasis of civility and social justice and social consciousness in the middle of nothing else, basically. Sorry, Texas. But New Hampshire, just by comparison, has no income tax at all on anything.
Okay.
However, oh boy, if you want to buy a house there, property taxes are monstrous, because that's how they make the money they need to survive.
Sure.
It's property taxes. So so I'm looking at apartments.
I'll fix you in an apartment.
Yeah, right. But not many will take pets.
But it's a trade-off, like you said. I mean, as my dad would say, nothing's free, right?
Arizona, always popular with people from Michigan.
Sure.
No, they would not tax my pension. But I got to be there 2 years. I can't just go there and take up residence already. I've got to be a resident there 2 years before they would not tax my pension from Michigan.
So Michigan would continue to tax it until those 2 years?
No.
Arizona would.
That's interesting. Yeah, Arizona would tax me at their rate. And
that's interesting.
Several other states who tax pensions like this, it's not 4.35%. It's like, you know, if you're above $50,000 a year in that pension, it's like 9% a year taxing your pension. So Michigan, as I've always tried to tell people, and even state reps who don't believe it, we're not being taxed very much. Business isn't being taxed much. We're not being taxed much. Even, we got the 6% state sales tax.
Yeah.
Other states have more than that because they also have city sales tax and county sales tax, like Arizona does. You wind up paying 12 to 14% if you're in the area of Phoenix and want to buy anything, just as a resident, 14%. So, don't give me this that Michigan has high taxes. Maybe you don't want to pay any money in taxes. I want good state services. I'm sorry, and I'm willing to pay for them, my fair share. But other states, we're not doing badly in terms of taxation at all. I mean, I'd like to see the Michigan fair tax, of course. We talked about that on this show. And, of course, if you want to go back and listen to our full hour on that, you can go back to April the 8th, just this month, when we talked to Dan Dabrowski. Go to Don Dabrowski. I wrote down Dan. Is it Don?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Dan. Don. Close.
He's probably listening, Tom.
Anyway, it's the journal show from WHFR.fm. Click on the journal button and then go to April the 8th, 11 this year, and you can hear the full story about Michigan fair tax. Something happened yesterday. The House passed a whole new finance bill, and the governor loved it, but I couldn't figure out what it was.
What do you mean you couldn't figure out?
Well, because the governor's press release just said the governor loved it. Thank you very much.
Oh.
So what sort of taxes or financing did they pass? I have no idea. Is it the education part? I'm sure it was covered in some other media. I didn't have a chance to look it up. Michigan.gov, folks, if you want to go there yourself. Yeah. Okay, well, so it's that phased-in approach that primarily people that have not yet retired but born after 1952, you better plan for that before you retire they're going to take that 4.35%. But as I said, other states as much as 9% on similar pensions, and the few states that have no tax on pensions make it up in other ways.
And they're phasing it in. That's what you just said?
Well, if they approve of the governor's new recommendation here.
And then hasn't that been the way that we've always said that things should be approached?
Well, yes. I do think that before you retire, although it should be significantly before you retire, that you can change your investments or reduce your lifestyle or pay off your house, your car, whatever, to accommodate that less income. Because the odds are it will be less income for almost everybody, whether it's a public pension or Social Security or whatever. So it takes a while to plan for that. I think he's phasing it in a little too quickly, but of course the state needs money.
Really bad.
Why don't we tax the rich? Excuse me. Why don't you use the Michigan fair tax and tax consumption? It makes no sense at all that the rich are getting a free ride for Social Security, for Medicaid, because above about $110,000 a year, you stop paying money into Medicare and Social Security. Yeah, you're all done. So if you make $250,000, that last $150,000, no taxes into Social Security, no taxes into Medicare, but you get the benefits when you retire. You still get the same benefits when you retire. No. And that's just not right. Those that can afford more should pay for those that can't completely afford anything but need that kind of health protection and that kind of safety net when they get older. My opinions on the show are just those of us, not necessarily anyone at Henry Ford Community College.
And didn't you listen to that conversation with Don Dabrowski about the Michigan Fair Tax? And didn't he give you a little bit of, wasn't it an optimistic conversation?
Yeah, and so this new taxing proposal that came out of the House, which hasn't gone to the Michigan Senate yet or the governor, it might include that. Who knows? I mean, but you'd think there would be big coverage if Michigan Fair Tax was part of that, but in fact it can't be part of a budget proposal. The Michigan Fair Tax has to be
an amendment.
So they really need a separate bill that says, you know, we agree to put this on the ballot for November.
Well, I'm not saying that.
So I don't think they did it really.
Right. Now, this may not be the case, but I'm just from listening to Dabrowski, and he seems to have his finger on the pulse of what's going on. And he does know the representation there and what they're going to do. So I felt really good after that.
Well, Republican majority, again, we know that several Republicans, Joanne, our DJ Joanne is here.
Joanne is here.
Okay. So that means Dennis and I have to skedaddle. Wind up and shut up here eventually. But not right now. We know that several Republicans, from Mike Huckabee, who may or may not run for president next time again, on down to a Republican candidate for governor in the primary, I can't remember his name now, but he's also a congressman, were in favor of fair tax proposals, national and state. And also the guy that ran, what's his name, Ricky, Scotty?
Oh, from the Green?
No, he lost, but he was a Republican running for a congressional district in Oakland County.
Oh.
Rocky.
Yeah.
Whatever his last name was.
Rockowitz,
yeah. And he ran against the Democrat, mm-hmm. Gary Peters, who won.
Right. Rockowitz was a fair tax advocate, is that
right? Right, and Peters' people did the unfair campaigning ads that said, oh, he wants to raise your taxes to 23%. No.
And we do include the slovenly thing that you just did on that.
Yeah.
But you're right. They gave us little bites of half the story, mm-hmm. and it did make it seem like it wasn't a good idea, but that wasn't the whole thing.
Obviously not. Michigan Fair Tax, yes. Consumption tax, sales taxes go up to 23% on everything.
Right.
But there's the prebate checks, and there's no taxes you have to pay from your paycheck.
No.
And no income taxes to be filled out and paid for the state. Every April, all gone.
It's going to happen.
So it's revenue neutral. It unless you're buying a lot of stuff all the time, and maybe you shouldn't buy so much. But if you're buying a lot of stuff you really don't need, yes, you're going to pay the extra taxes.
And the reality is that once it'll take one state to do it, it'll catch on, and you know how this works.
Well,
and
I think it will if it works, and sure. I don't know why it wouldn't. Again, it would actually eliminate all the business taxes, not just reduce them to 6%, eliminate them. But it would balance out. It's the same revenue coming in. But it comes from, listen to our show on April the 8th of the Journal, and you get the whole story there. Something else coming up here.
Oh, yeah. Relay for Life is tomorrow.
Yes.
That's huge.
And that's going to be at the Center.
The Center of Performing Arts.
Michigan Avenue in Greenfield. If you can participate, it starts
10 a.m.
tomorrow at 10 a.m. and goes through Saturday morning. I think probably it stops after 24 hours of walking. So
Saturday
it's all gone by noon. But maybe you want to go over there, get some information. You don't necessarily have to donate, but maybe you should. It's fighting cancer, and a lot of cancer survivors find this very supportive event. The community comes out for this cause. It's a very important thing. And it is happening nationally at various